Good morning, everybody.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi. As you heard, my discussion or my talks on demons and devils of Babylon. So why are we even remotely interested in giving thought to the Babylonian gods when we believe in the one true God, the only God, the creator of all? What's the point? Well, to my surprise, I found this study of demons of Babylon fascinating and relevant, and I had no idea of their influence and how far and how wide it has spread to even the present day in our culture. You know of Christmas, you know of Easter, and how we've learnt about the pagan influence there. That was all Babylonian. And the Trinity, and it goes on and on. So to understand, now there was God's chosen people, the Israelites, had to be reworked and re-educated in the truth and put behind them these myths, legends and beliefs that they had got from the Babylonians. It's interesting to find that some of the Old Testament prophecy are word for word ancient Babylonian texts, just reworded with different characters. Babylon had a great influence on Israel. Did you know that Babylon was the birthplace of Abraham? Ur was just around the corner. I think it was in that map there, or they referred to Ur. And did you know that the king at the time of Abraham's birth was Nimrod? And according to Jewish history, Abraham's father Terah was Nimrod's right-hand man, his minister. So we have Terah worshipping the gods that Nimrod did and making idols as well. Just like the king, Terah worshipped the sun. Baal was a good god of heaven, and Mot was the evil god under the water. People believed that the kings were not human, but a god from heaven. And so we have Nimrod viewed as a god, and these gods lived and died among them. The Babylonians, like many other cultures, adopted a two-pronged god system. We have the Asians, the Egyptians, the Eskimos, all had two sets of gods, and that was a set of good gods and a set of bad devil gods. So just as there's night and day and black and white and light and dark and good and bad, there was a distinct classification with these groups of gods, and the boundaries couldn't be crossed. And it's very human to figure that black could never be white and vice versa. To mix the two would result in grey, and this would be indistinct and not acceptable. And how could bad ever be good and good bad anyway? So we being human have a problem of understanding that good and evil can reign together in one being that is purely perfect and does everything unquestionably correctly. Now it's thanks to Duncan Heaster and his book The Real Devil, which I thoroughly recommend. It's heady going, but if you get to page 40, you pretty much have all the evidence that you need to grasp the real situation of the devil culture. Duncan makes you realise just how important it is to have, how often God has to stress to his chosen people that he is the only one, that he does both good and evil, and to put away those superstitions and idols and good luck charms. Another interesting point he raises is that many cultures have stories which are parallel to Bible stories, often word for word, just the characters are different. And here are some examples. Psalm 104, verse 3. Yahweh rides the chariot on the wings of the wind. This is a parallel to the Near East Ninurta god. Ninurta, N-I-N-U-R-T-A, struggled with Satan in the water. But Yahweh does his wishes with the water. He has no struggle. Verses 7 to 16 of Psalm 104. In Job, there's a whole string of popular Cainite cosmic battles. The point of the passage is that Yahweh is far greater, and effectively the demons don't even exist. If you look at Job chapter 26 verses 12 to 14, there's a reference to a gliding serpent, and this is a reference to the Babylon god Mot. The well-known Lucifer passage of Isaiah chapter 14 is about the rise and fall of the king of Babylon. The words Satan, angel and devil are never mentioned at all, as some believers of today in the devil culture assume. The likening of Babylon's king to the morning star suggests reference to Athtar, A-T-H-T-A-R, the shining one, son of the dawn, who goes up to the reaches of Zaphron to challenge King Baal and is hurled down. Familiar? What Isaiah is pointing out is that Israel and Judah should concern themselves with the realities around them rather than some cosmic speculation of legends that they've heard. Look to the king of Babylon, not a bunch of mythical cosmic rebels who are terrorizing God's people. That's not happening. It was the Babylon power that invaded Israel from the north down through the Fertile Crescent, not some invisible demon. The north was seen in pagan mythology as the seat of evil gods. And Israel is geographically situated at the crossroads of many cultures, especially in regard to other gods and common ideas of a god of good and a god of evil. The god of evil in many cultures had horns. The ancient Near East believed in the evil in the sea, and Canaanite myths had these evil gods revolting against the creator, Baal. From Genesis to Revelation, the world of supernatural mythical demons becomes non-existent because of Yahweh's amazing power and involvement with his people. The Bible begins with God creating a great sea monster. And that's in Genesis chapter 21. Chapter 1 verse 21. And this sea monster is in control, and those sea monsters are fulfilling God's will. So if you want to look at Genesis chapter 1, verse 21, we can see the great monsters of the deep that God created. And it's just interesting to think, you know, when you look at the expanse of the water, it can be quite disturbing to think there's something under there that we don't know about.
Yeah, and that's... You don't think the monsters are whales?
Well, yes, they are the whales. Okay. But, so we've got the large sea creatures being created. And then we've got in Psalm 148, verse 7, the same sea creatures are going about fulfilling and praising God, fulfilling his ways and praising God. They're not, you know, a destructive evil monster. They're there giving praise to God. Completely opposite idea to what those myths and legends talk about, these monsters under the sea. That they turn them into gods to be feared. Yes, so they're peaceful creatures who praise and are on God's side. Moses also helps the Egyptians, deconstructs the Egyptian and Canaanite myth on evil and gives the true understanding. Instead of, this is the example, right, the people got around wearing amulets to protect themselves from demons. And the Israelites were instructed to wear phylacteries to remember their deliverance. So instead of being in a defensive mode and, you know, this will protect me, this lucky charm, they've been brought to have positive thoughts and remembering that Yahweh saved them from the power of evil, and that evil was actually Pharaoh of Egypt. No mythical god, a real person. Mot of the underworld was also referred to as the angel of death in their writings. And Moses picks up on this idea to show that Yahweh is in complete control when he slew the firstborn of Egypt in Exodus 12, 11 to 12, and Isaiah 37, 36. So God is aware that his people had hang-ups and baggage from the Babylonian culture. Remember, Abraham's dad was much into idol worship. And I did some research on Abraham. I thought, what was his upbringing? And when you read the Jewish history, there's all these stories about Abraham, how when he was born, the stargazers predicted that Abraham would rise up and be a threat to the kingdom. And so the story goes that the king, Nimrod, was to slay Abram, right, as a baby, but his dad, Terah, swapped him to a slave baby born the same time, and so Abram was saved. The mother, I don't know what happened to Terah, but the mother and Abram go and live in a cave for 10 years. And then they go to Mount Ararat, where Noah's still alive. Mm-hmm. I thought this was really quite exciting. And he's 10 generations from Mount Noah, because he lived 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got Noah there. So we've got Abram being brought up in Noah's household. And then when he was 30 or 50, I can't remember why, he heard word that there was this destruction in Babel, in Babylon, where he used to live. So he decides to go back to Babylon to preach the true God. And he comes across his father, who is now making the idols and producing them, and Abram said, when he was there on duty, they all got smashed. And he lied to his father, saying, oh, they had a battle between each other, and look what happened. But anyway, they didn't fall for that. So King Nimrod, the fiery furnace thing, he threw Abraham into the fiery furnace, and he survived. And so after that, that's when we get the story of, you know, God was pleased with Abraham and took him out and said, go and find a new land that I will show you. Interesting. Anyway. The story also goes that his older brother, Haran, jumped into the furnace because now he believed his brother, but he was disintegrated. Anyway, that's Jewish history. Now, if we look at in the Bible, and I thought this was quite exciting, there was some reference to an underwater god called Rahab and Leviathan. And both Rahab and Leviathan were Babylonian evil gods in the water. And the Israelites would have been familiar with them and may have even been scared of them. Okay, so we have God puts his people's mind at ease and tries to calm them by helping them to see that their supposed devils were killed. So God was like a parent trying to convince his scared children that there are no monsters under the bed. We read about the slaughter of the demon god by the one true God in Isaiah chapter 51 verse 9. We might look at that. So it's Isaiah chapter 51 verse 9. It's just a strange verse where the Israelites are going through the Red Sea, and we have this verse jump out at us that says, Rahab was cut into pieces.
Like, read the whole verse.
Yeah. Okay, I haven't got the Bible up here. Could I have somebody read?
So which verse was it?
51.
51. Chapter 51.
Chapter 51, verse 9. Maybe start a bit before.
Awake, awake, clothe yourself with strength. Is that the right one?
Yeah.
Yep, there it is.
Okay. Awake, awake, clothe yourself with strength. O arms of the Lord, awake. As in the days gone by, as in generations of old. Was it not you who cut Rahab to pieces, who pierced that monster through? Was it not you who dried up the sea, the waters of the great deep? Who made a road in the depths of the sea so that the redeemed might cross over, the ransomed of the Lord will return.
Beautiful, thank you. Yeah, that's
pretty
odd,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And can I read that out from the message?
Sure, how about, you can.
It's not a bit earlier even, maybe. I'm just sort of
learning. Wake up, flex your muscles, God. Wake up as in the old days, in the long ago. Didn't you once make mincemeat of Rahab to dispatch the old chaos dragon? And didn't you once dry up the sea, the powerful waters of the deep, and then made the bottom of the ocean a road for the redeemed to walk across? In the same way, God's ransom will come back. Come back to Zion, cheering, shouting, joy eternal, wreathing their heads, exuberant ecstasies transporting them, and not a sign of moans or groans.
Yeah, so that's really lovely, Margaret, thank you. And, we have Rahab being destroyed.
Yes, so how does that all work? Where does Rahab
come from? Well, Rahab was one of the gods that they
familiar with. Not the same Rahab.
No, okay.
Yeah. And it's actually mentioned 5 times in the Bible, this devil Rahab.
Is it?
We've got it again in Job 26:12.
Yeah.
Job 9:13. Beneath his bowed the helpers of Rahab. And in Psalms 87 verse 4, among those who know me, I mention Rahab and Babylon, chapter verse 10. So it's the Babylon, the Rahab all together.
Yeah.
Amazing. So God understood the people, and he was weaving his story into their stories and into their hearts. Okay? It was easier for the Israelites to grasp something that they were familiar with and accommodate the truth than to have something completely new and disturbing thrown at them. That's a thought. When you think about Paul going into Athens and he saw all of those idols. He didn't go there and condemn them. He saw the idol that had to the unknown God, and he gently wove the true story into their culture. Anyway, but human nature has a hard time putting aside the natural tendency to accommodate good and evil together. That's where we are today. We see it around us. We have a good God and we have the devil. So the Babylonian influence of the dual God system is still around today. We are still children with the monster under the bed. We need to give glory to God and to give him credit that he is really the one and only true God in control of all. And I'll just finish off with Isaiah chapter 25, verse 7. Actually, we might start from verse 5, Isaiah 45, verse 5.
I'll just read quickly. God's message to his anointed, this is from the beginning of the chapter, to Cyrus, whom he took by the hand to give the task of taming the nations and terrifying their kings. He gave him free rein, no restrictions. I'll go ahead of you, clearing and paving the road. I'll break down bronze city gates, smash padlocks, kick down barred entrances. I'll lead you to buried treasures, secret caches of valuables, confirmations that it is I, in fact, I, God, the God of Israel, who calls you by your name. It's because of my dear servant Jacob, Israel my chosen, that I've singled you out, called you my told you by name, and given you this privileged work, and you don't even know me. Is that it? Is that where you want me to stop? I am God, the only God there
that's
is.
That's right, yeah.
There are no real gods.
That's right.
I am the one who armed you for this work, though you don't even know me, so that everyone from east to west will know that I have no God rivals. I am God, the only God there is. I form light and create darkness. I make harmonies and create discords.
That's it.
I, God, do all these things.
Thank you, Margaret. That's what I was wanting to point out. I do the light, I do the dark, I do the good, I do the bad.
Yeah, it's me.
All in one God.
Yeah.
You need no other. I am the one and only. There is no other.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great way to finish.